Good morning, everyone. I'm sorry to interrupt as your conversations are just now ramping back up from our reprieve. We are going to begin the meeting. You will notice that we do not have quorum, but because we recognize that so many of these items are time sensitive and need to be before City Housing Authority, we'll go ahead and take some advisory votes, hear public testimony and all that. But we will be proceeding with today's meeting. So I will call it to order and remind everyone that any member of the public who wishes to address the Housing Commission must fill out a speaker request form. Speakers are going to be limited to 3 minutes each, collective testimony limited to 15 minutes per side. Non-agenda public comments will be heard at the beginning of each meeting. Those who wish to address the board about a topic that is not on the agenda must fill out a white speaker request form. Members of the public may also request to have an item pulled from consent agenda, which we don't have today. To speak on a matter on the agenda, members of the public must complete a speaker request form and submit it to the recording secretary before the item is called. Those who wish to speak in opposition to the item must complete the pink-colored form. Those in favor, please complete the gold-colored form. And with that, we will move into public comment. We do have one speaker request, and Mr. Justin Kerr. Is he here? Hi, would you like to address the commission? If you just want to come up here to this little microphone dais thing.
Yes, thank you.
Welcome.
Forgive me, I have this written down because I'm not good with public speaking yet. I was referred to come here regarding the following. I was a resident of the Plaza Hotel for about a year and a month. And in February of this year, I received, along with other tenants of the hotel, a notice which stated the Plaza Hotel was closing and that the tenants were being forced to vacate the premises. The notice went on to explain that the tenants who had resided at the Plaza for 90 days or longer were eligible to receive relocation assistance monies in accordance with the law. The notice mentioned that I needed to sign the form in order to get this money, and then it said that within 5 business days of signing it, I'd receive the money. What ended up happening was during that time, a whole month went by. During that time, each one of us tenants had received a form saying that the agreement had been rescinded and postponed. During that time, I was in the process of moving. I had actually moved into a new residence that I am in now, and I never received my money initially, and so I needed to borrow money from my parents to afford my first month's rent. After what happened was I had saved up money over about a year's time and I liquidated my money moving into this other place. But since that time, I did receive this check from the Plaza, but I have brought up to the Housing Commission staff members that I was able to speak with about this money, which was listed in a newspaper article, which was written by Gary Warth. And in this article, it was mentioned about monies that the Housing Commission was bringing up, was putting forth to further assist prior and current tenants of the Plaza Hotel to total $500,000, and that they were able to pay a portion of to residents depending on their individual situation and needs. And I actually was able to call the Union Tribune upon suggestion of one of the staff members of the Housing Commission and speak with Gary Warth, and he told me after I was able to explain pretty much all the details of my situation to him that he thinks I should qualify for a portion of this $500,000, and he was the one that referred me to come to this meeting and tell you when I speak about this. And I know that I'm allotted 3 minutes, so I don't know how much of my details of my situation I can get into at this point, or what I need to do. I'm very much a novice to this situation, but I'm trying to do what I can to make known that I feel very, very strongly that I should qualify for a portion of this money.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for explaining that. We will most definitely have staff follow up with you. I would be curious, too, if we could identify, because of that strange gap scenario, because of the incorrect information that was sent to the tenants, how many folks took it upon themselves to find other residences, but then got caught in that sort of interesting situation that you're in. Unfortunately, we can't get into a back and forth here, but we will be definitely following up.
Yeah, there were a relatively small number of people, and as I understand it, the Jones's group dealt with that as well as Emily's group and everyone has been paid, to my understanding, and it was a glitch because of the developer failed to give the proper notice to the commission and jumped the gun. So we had to undo it and start it again. And with respect to that additional money, I think contact with the Lisa Jones department would probably be the best way to deal with that.
Thank you. Moving on, do we have any commissioner comments? Seeing none, we'll move on to the President and CEO's report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a few very brief comments. First is personal. I want to thank board members, staff, and members of the public who were very supportive to me over the last couple of months as I've been recovering from surgery. Back now, as you can see, at least part-time, and thank you very much. I appreciate that. Secondly, we celebrated a grand opening on March the 23rd of the COM 22 property partnership we have with Habitat for Humanity. And our partnership with San Diego's Habitat for Humanity has culminated so far in home ownership for four families. And Council Member Vivian Marino, former Council Member David Alvarez, and Stephanie Benvenuto, our chair of this board, participated in the ceremonies on March 23rd to welcome these four families into the new townhomes in Logan Heights. When construction of all three phases of this property are completed, the project will be home to some 11 families in the new townhouses in this development. And this represents some of the best of what we do, and is a welcome addition to that neighborhood. Last month, on March the 13th and 14th, this agency was honored with a visit by a delegation of housing folks from the United Kingdom, specifically from the southeast of England, London, and the surrounding counties around London. And it was about 20 members of an outfit called the Chartered Institute of Housing. And the Chartered Institute of Housing in the UK is equivalent to NARO, the National Association of Housing Redevelopment Officials here, and led by an old buddy of mine. And we spent a couple of days with staff and that group discussing our programs and theirs and interacting with them. And I want to thank staff for hosting those folks. I'll point out in particular, we had one person who does understand the language. Lisa Jones actually spent about 8 years of her career working in housing programs in England. So we weren't totally separated by the same language when they were here. It was a very good visit. Also, finally, Madam Chair, I'd like to introduce two new officers of the company here who I think represent some of the best of who and what we are. Two new vice presidents. I'm going to embarrass them and make them stand up. First is Carrie Bell. Carrie? Carrie is our new vice president of rental assistance. She oversees the day-to-day operations of our rental assistance programs down on the third floor, services and activities, and is under the leadership of our senior vice president, Azucena Valladolid. I'll point out that rental assistance is our largest program, serving some 15,500 families every month, and you can imagine how busy they get on the third floor of that program. Carrie has earned her way into this position, and it's a great promotion for you and for us, and I want to thank you very much. Thank you. I'd also like to introduce our other newest vice president, and that is Diana Villanueva. Diana, would you stand up? Diana works under the leadership of Senior VP Lisa Jones. And Diana oversees three initiatives of Housing First San Diego and our Homelessness Action Plan. Diana oversees our Landlord Engagement and Assistance Program, LEAP. She oversees our Homelessness Prevention and Diversion Program, and also the Housing Commission's Moving Home Rapid Rehousing Program. I want to thank you also, Diana, for your leadership here, and we're very pleased that you're in this position. Thank you very much. And let me point out just as also both Carrie and Deanna earned their promotions through very hard work and demonstrated leadership here that's been instrumental to the effectiveness of our departments. It also reflects the philosophy of this administration that we always look internal for leadership as we can. I'd like to point out that every one of our six senior VPs, as well as our executive VP, Jeff Davis, have earned promotions since they've been here to move up into the positions they're in. We always look to fill internally before we go outside. And I think that produces a healthy organization. I think it's a good support to morale from staff. And it also means we get the best people because they've been with us and we know them. So for these two ladies, thank you very much. And also for the other staff leadership here, I very much appreciate it. And now, Madam Chair, I'll turn it back over to you.
Congratulations. We will be going a little out of order, so I apologize to staff in advance. we're going to start with item 102, the preliminary bond authorization for Wesley Terrace. Hello, welcome. Good morning, Chair, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen, Tina Kessler, Housing Programs Manager, and then with me is Colin Miller, Vice President of Housing Finance, here to give you the presentation this morning on Wesley Terrace. The item before you today is a request to take initial steps to issue multifamily housing revenue bonds for the acquisition and rehabilitation of Wesley Terrace. Staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the Housing Authority issue a bond inducement resolution for up to $24 million in multifamily housing revenue bonds, authorize an application and subsequent applications, if necessary, to the California Debt Limit Allocation Committee, and approve the financing team of Squire Patton Boggs as bond counsel and CSG Advisors as the financial advisor. Additionally, staff requests that the Housing Commission recommend that the City Council hold a Tax Equity and Fiscal Responsibility Act, or TEFRA, public hearing and adopt a resolution approving the issuance of the bonds. The proposed rehabilitation project is an existing 161-unit development located at 5343 Monroe Avenue in the College area of Council District 9. Wesley Terrace is an existing 8-story building, originally built in 1973, as shown on this slide, and incorporates 114 studio units, 45 one-bedroom units, one one-bedroom manager unit, and one two-bedroom manager's unit. Additionally, here's a photo of a typical unit interior. This slide here is a couple more pictures of the property. It shows the current community space, as well as one of the hallways on the floor. Comprehensive renovations are planned for both units as well as the building, including flooring, fixtures, appliances, common area improvements, elevator improvements, and exterior painting and lighting improvements. From here, I will turn it over to Colin.
Thank you. To summarize the developer's request, you are considering approvals to take the preliminary steps to issue up to $24 million in tax-exempt multifamily housing revenue bonds. No loan funds from the Housing Commission are being requested. Approval of the bond issuance and TEFRA resolutions does not commit the Housing Authority to issue bonds. The bonds would not constitute a debt to the city. If bonds are ultimately issued for the project, the bonds will not financially obligate the city, the Housing Authority, or the Housing Commission, because security for the repayment of the bonds will be limited to specific private revenue sources of the project. The developer of the project is CNC Development Group, LLC, and DAL Developments, LLC. Together, they have completed 28 properties totaling 36,778 affordable units. The total development cost of the project will be approximately $28.3 million, which comes to approximately $176,000 per unit. Sources of funding include bonds, tax credit equity, capitalized interest from operations, and a deferred developer fee. The units will be restricted at 50 and 60% of area median income for 55 years. Rents will range from $853 to $1,095 per month for the studio and one-bedroom units. Eligible households and individuals will have incomes ranging from $34,100 to $46,740 annually based on the 2018 rent and income chart. The item will be brought back for final bond-related approvals later this calendar year. The developer expects to close financing in 2019 and complete the renovations within 12 months. Thank you for your time. This concludes the presentations. We're happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Always happy to see these projects that are preservation coming before us. Thank you for this. I have a possibly outside the clear path question. When folks come to us with these sorts of requests, what sort of inspection is done on the property prior to approval? Meaning that if somebody came to you with an affordable site that they were trying to preserve or extend the life of the affordable provisions, and it was in total disrepair, and you know, we're just trying to make sure that we're keeping quality units viable for folks, how do we check that?
Should I start? So with the bond program and with our loan programs, we have the developer submit a comprehensive needs assessment, and that's part of our review process.
Great, and we have some sort of a general checklist process whereby we determine that these are units and a developer and project manager that we trust that are solid units that, you know, will continue to be an asset to the community, right?
That's great. Correct. We look at the developer's experience as well.
Thank you. Just a quick question I had. Thanks. Any other questions?
Not a question. It's great to see these projects where the cost per unit is nice and low and makes money go far. Thank you.
Now I need to be reminded, what is it, an advisory vote we can take?
Yes, because both of these actions need, in one case, for the bond issuance, the housing authority's approval, and in the case of the TEFRA hearing, the city council's approval, this has to go forward anyway.
Right.
We don't have a quorum, so that would not be a binding action, but we're advisory anyway, so I'd suggest you just take the vote, and we'll note on the minutes that this is an advisory action.
Thank you. With that in mind, do we have a motion for an advisory vote? Okay, moved by Commissioner Davis, seconded by Commissioner Klumner. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries. Thank you. And we're going to continue to use this sort of unorthodox agenda situation to, I believe you wanted to make a comment, Commissioner Klumner, on an earlier item.
Yeah, here's a good.
Thank you.
I was just thinking over the Plaza Hotel situation after our public comment, and I spoke to council. And one thing that I haven't seen mentioned in public is the Housing Commission, our council sent a letter to the owners that threatened legal action if they didn't immediately take steps to correct the improper eviction that they had started on. And this is such a mess of a situation, and this is not the first story I've heard. I just want to make clear to the public that the Housing Commission is watching these situations, is dealing with them swiftly. Our staff is dealing with them very swiftly. You're all doing a wonderful job. And, you know, for anyone else in the future, that may go about an eviction improperly like that, they should take note that the Housing Commission was immediately prepared to take whatever steps were necessary to undo that mess. And unfortunately, as we're seeing, there's parts of this that it's going to be very tricky to undo, and it's unfortunate that it came to that. But hopefully this situation doesn't happen again, and I hope anyone else going about that process takes note of it.
Thank you. With that, let's we can go ahead and take item 100, the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, the HEAP funding, I believe.
In regard to this item, this was a matter that was scheduled to be heard here with an advance notice to the Housing Authority, which would have become final 7 days after the action. But since there is not a quorum at the time of this vote, this will now become an advisory matter that will be required to go to the Housing Authority for approval.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Venuto and Commissioners. I'm Lisa Jones, Senior Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations, and with me today is Marley Williams, our Senior Programs Analyst who oversees our rapid rehousing programs that are administered. We're here before you today to discuss the expansion of our rapid rehousing program portfolio. Our rapid rehousing programs provide permanent housing to individuals and families experiencing homelessness in the City of San Diego. The Housing Commission currently administers 6 rapid rehousing programs with 5 service providers. Those programs are funded by a combination of federal sources of funds. Using the coordinated entry system, individuals and families experiencing homelessness are assessed and connected to service providers operating programs specific to their needs. The rapid rehousing programs provide assistance to individuals and families, such as case management services, short to long-term rental assistance, move-in expenses, including utility payments, housing search and landlord negotiation assistance, referrals to other services to help stabilize and support individuals and families to ensure long-term housing success. Once enrolled, clients are connected to services and staff. Who then work with the clients to locate permanent housing. The staff also assist clients with increasing or maintaining income supports while delivering supportive services. Rental assistance subsidies paid to the landlord on behalf of the tenant incrementally decrease over time.
HEAP funding is authorized by Senate Bill 850, which was signed into law in June 2019. The funds are... 2018. The funds are allocated to cities experiencing a severe homelessness crisis. HEAP funds must be contractually obligated by January 1, 2020 and completely expended by June 30, 2021. HEAP funds in the amount of $1.36 million annually will support 3 new rapid rehousing programs in the City of San Diego through April 30, 2021. The Housing Commission published a competitive solicitation in February 2019 to request proposals for the rapid rehousing expansion. 4 proposals were received in response to the solicitation. After a thorough evaluation, each application was rated and ranked according to the requirements of the request for proposals. 3 proposals were selected for contract awards. The agencies selected include People Assisting the Homeless, HomeStart, and the Salvation Army. Each agency will receive $454,726 in HEAP funding with an initial contract term of May 1, 2019 to April 30, 2020, with 1 one-year option to extend each contract. Each agency must serve a minimum of 40 households for a total of 120 households served over the 2-year period. Staff recommends the Board of Commissioners take the following actions. Authorize the execution of agreements with PATH, HomeStart, and the Salvation Army in the amount of $454,726 each in HEAP funds to operate their respective rapid rehousing programs from May 1, 2019 through April 30, 2020, with a 1-year option to extend each respective agreement to April 30, 2021. Authorize the President and CEO or designee to execute all necessary documents and instruments necessary to implement the approvals. And authorize the president and CEO to increase funding amounts in the initial operating year by no more than 30% of the annual operating budget, without increasing the initial term budget amount and reducing the option year budget by the same amount without further action by the board. Further authorize the president and CEO to substitute funding sources and or increase compensation by not more than 20% of the total agreement amount, if necessary. It is important to note that contract execution is contingent on execution of a memorandum of understanding that is being developed between the Housing Commission and the City of San Diego, subject to the approval of the Housing Authority and the San Diego City Council. The MOU will detail the roles and responsibilities of the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission regarding allocation and administration of HEAP funding. That concludes our presentation. We are available to answer any questions, and we also have representatives from all three providers here as well.
Thank you. Congratulations to the providers. Do we have any commissioner questions?
Thank you for the presentation. So, yeah, HEAP has a 5% set aside for youth specifically that the city attached. Is that correct?
Yes, $705,000.
Okay. Is any of that being allocated here?
No, not specifically for these programs. The intention of the Housing Commission and the city is to leverage that $705,000 with the Youth Homeless Demonstration Program funding. That's a little over $7 million that's going to be released either end of this week or next week through an RFP from the Regional Task Force on the Homeless. And the idea, because COC funding is very limited in service dollars, is to utilize that $705,000 to help with match requirements and leverage supportive services for those deep housing subsidies in that grant.
Great. So any of the funds that we're allocating here that would be going towards similar purposes, that's just doubling up on the additional 5% that will be leveraged and allocated later.
Right. So this $2.7 million here is specifically towards the rapid rehousing. It can serve a TAE population, but it's not TAE specific. The $705,000 that's TAE specific is solely focused on the TAE and leveraging those YHDP funds.
Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
What is the full amount of HEAP funding that the Housing Commission will be responsible for expending?
Right now, as it mentioned, the MOU isn't final. It's looking between about 11.1 to 11.8 million. That depends on a few buckets that the city hasn't determined how they want to administer them yet. But funding for flex subsidy pool, rapid rehousing, prevention diversion for our own program, the LEAP program for landlords, safe parking, storage centers, all that's coming over to us.
Okay. Just because the timing makes me a little nervous. Is this timeline voting now to start spending May 1st, and then we have
2 years.
My math is really bad. Yeah,
it's
a fast sort of turnaround. So I'm just kind of curious what the timeline is to get that full plan fleshed and before all the bodies it needs to be
right.
Before.
So that's one of the reasons why, even though we didn't have an MOU in place, we decided to move forward. We actually released the RFP a couple months ago in anticipation of getting that MOU through, and we wanted to be very proactive. So for the family reunification, we've got sole sourcing, which we'll talk about. This one we released an RFP for. The safe parking, the prevention diversion, the flexible subsidy, all of those are either going to be sole sourced or we're going to be operating directly. So we'll be able to implement quickly. That gives us 2 years. And we technically have to expend all the money by June 2021, but our goal is by April, just because of sort of fiscal time it takes to reconcile GL general ledger balances, things like that. We want to make sure we're ahead of schedule. If you'll notice in the rapid rehousing ask, it asks for flexibility to move 30% of next year's funding forward so that we can front load the program, get as many families onto the program early so we have as much time as necessary to spend with them, and we make sure that all those funds get expended.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Also, Madam Chair, a couple of points. First is that in an ideal world, we would execute an MOU, which the city would have developed first before we get into the program mechanics. But unfortunately, we don't live in an ideal world. And what we're trying to do is to make sure that we do take actions coterminous with the cities so that we can get services to the people on the streets as soon as we can without undue bureaucratic or administrative delays. So we're not really moving ahead of the game here. We're trying to move coterminous with other processes so we get it done. Secondly, is that this is really a reflection of the position we've had with the city going back about 8 to 10 years, and I expect to keep growing with the city and also with the regional task force, and that is that as additional programs become available and resources available to deal with the homelessness issue, the Housing Commission is here. We're ready. We're capable. We're responsible. And we'll respond as they need us to. And that has seemed to produce a good and functional relationship with both the task force and the city administration down the street. Thank you.
Thank you. And then as a final question, more programmatic, the rapid rehousing helps those experiencing homelessness. What about it is rapid in that? Is it folks who are just recently made homeless, or is there some sort of fast track here I'm not aware of?
So actually, that's a really interesting question, because the rapid rehousing has a lot of people have a lot of thoughts about that. What it really means is that we're rapidly getting them off the street and back into housing as quickly as possible. So there's a metric in all rapid rehousing programs as how the percentage of households that enroll in the program are housed within 30 days, right? So the goal would be around 80% are housed within 30 days. In our rental environment, that can be a little challenging, but we've seen some real successes. So the idea is it's rapid on the front end. And then on the back end, it's actually real time spent with those families anywhere from 6 to 24 months to really ensure stabilization so that when they exit the program, they'll be stable on their own.
Thank you. That makes sense. Okay. This is another advisory vote.
Yes, it is. And Madam Chair, we might make a slight modification to recommendation 5. It currently says that the contracts are contingent upon the MOU between the Housing Commission and the city, which is still true, and that there would be a separate action of the Housing Authority and City Council. I would request as a procedural matter that the vote allow that MOU to be synced up with this report going to the Housing Authority so that we don't have to bring it back here first and then up to the Housing Authority in the city, just to expedite the matter.
Absolutely. Okay. So with that, do we have a motion? Move with the recommendation from
yes.
Council. Okay, great. And second from Commissioner Hubbard. All in favor?
Aye.
Great. Motion passes. Thank you. Next up, we have item 101. The budget and scope of work amendment for the Family Reunification Program. We do also have two speakers on the matter following the formal presentation. Welcome.
Good morning again. I'm Lisa Jones, Senior Vice President of Homeless Housing Innovations, and with me is Deanna Villanueva, our Vice President of Housing First Programs. We're here before you today to discuss the expansion of the Family Reunification Program to include 7 new service areas in the City of San Diego. The Family Reunification Program is part of the Housing Commission's Housing First San Diego Homelessness Action Plan. This action plan includes the Homelessness Prevention and Shelter Diversion Program as one of the components for addressing homelessness in the City of San Diego. Programming includes the Downtown San Diego Clean and Safe Family Reunification Program, which is a collaboration with the Downtown San Diego Partnership that focuses on addressing homelessness specifically in downtown San Diego. In the Family Reunification Program, housing navigators from the Downtown Partnership engage in outreach to individuals and families experiencing homelessness. The Downtown Partnership also coordinates with law enforcement and local service agencies to provide linkages to services. Relocation and follow-up services are then provided to individuals and families experiencing homelessness. Efforts include connecting with family members or friends willing to receive the person experiencing homelessness, ensuring that the recipient understands what services or supports the person reunifying may need, and reaching out to the receiving persons through follow-up calls. From June 1, 2017 through February 28, 2019, 1,360 individuals have been reunited with family or friends. The contract with the Downtown Partnership will expire on June 30, 2019. Due to quality contract performance by Downtown Partnership, the Housing Commission is exercising the ability to utilize a sole source justification to renew the contract according to agency policies contained in Section 9.4 of the Statement of Procurement Policy. The Downtown Partnership has excelled in their local collaborations with local service agencies and the Homeless Outreach Team, and is consistently meeting programmatic requirements such as exceeding outcomes, fund utilization, and adhering to the Housing Commission administrative deadlines. As part of Housing First San Diego Commission funds were allocated to support the program and serve the downtown area. Under the Homeless Emergency Aid Program, or HEAP, additional state funds are available to cities experiencing a significant homelessness crisis. As a result, additional funds are available for a two-year expansion of the Family Reunification Program. The additional funding will expand the program's service areas to include Bankers Hill, Balboa Park, Hillcrest, Barrio Logan, Golden Hill, and Sherman Heights, as well as downtown. With the expanded service areas, the program is anticipated to serve 1,400 individuals experiencing homelessness.
HEAP funding is authorized by Senate Bill 850, which was signed into law in June 2018. As previously mentioned, the funds are allocated to cities experiencing a severe homelessness crisis. HEAP funds must be contractually obligated by January 1, 2020, and completely expended by June 30, 2021. HEAP funds received by the city will be allocated in part to the Family Reunification Program. Of the $450,000 allocated to the program, $90,000 will be added to the existing contract via a budget amendment for May 2019 to the close of the fiscal year. This will enable the Housing Commission to begin expanding the program quickly. The remaining $360,000 of HEAP funding will increase the fiscal year 2020 operating budget to ensure immediate operations ensue in the expanded service areas and serve an increased number of individuals experiencing homelessness during fiscal year 2020. Staff recommends that the Board of Commissioners take the following actions. Authorize the execution of a contract amendment for $90,000 in the current contract term, and authorize a budget increase of $360,000 for the fiscal year 2020 contract term for a total fiscal year 2020 annual budget of $754,000. Further, authorize the President and CEO or designee to execute all documents and instruments necessary to implement the approvals, and authorize the President and CEO to substitute funding sources and or increase compensation by not more than 20% of the total agreement amount, if necessary. It is important to note that the contract amendment is contingent upon execution of a memorandum of understanding that is being developed between the Housing Commission and the City of San Diego, subject to the approval of the Housing Authority and the San Diego City Council. The MOU will detail the roles and responsibilities of the City of San Diego and the Housing Commission regarding the allocation and administration of HEAP funding. That concludes our presentation. We, as well as representatives from the Downtown Partnership, are available to answer any questions.
Thank you. We're all in this together today. I would like to ask Kalei Levy and Keitra Carter to join us. They submitted a speaker request form. Welcome.
Oh, there we go. Good morning, Chair Benvenuto, President Gentry, and Commissioners. My name is Kalei Levy, and I'm here today on behalf of the Downtown San Diego Partnership. I'd first like to begin by thanking you and the Housing Commission staff for your previous support of our homeless outreach efforts. As you know, our homeless outreach team works in tandem with the partnership's efforts to effectively address homelessness in a compassionate way and connect individuals to housing resources. Thanks in large part to the San Diego Housing Commission funding, one of our greatest tools in our homeless outreach team's toolkit is our Family Reunification Program, which we created to help those in our community who want to end their homelessness by connecting with their support systems. Through our program's continuation and the addition of HEAP funding, we look forward to assisting even more clients and expanding our street outreach presence in neighboring communities. Here to share more with you is our homeless outreach lead, Ketra Carter.
Good morning, commissioners. Thank you for the opportunity to share more about our program. My name is Ketra Carter, and I have the privilege of leading the Downtown San Diego Partnership's homeless outreach coordinators. And as you know, through our family reunification program, we identify homeless individuals who will benefit most by traveling to their support systems and families. Loved ones are contacted to ensure that we are reuniting individuals with a safe and stable place for them to get back on their feet. And once confirmed, the outreach team offers transportation to reconnect those individuals with their valuable support systems. At an average cost of $602 per person, reuniting a homeless individual with loved ones comes at a much smaller price tag than the average cost of rental assistance in San Diego. Since July of 2018, we have reunited 613 individuals with their support systems both in California and across the country. And since the life of the program, we have assisted over 2,600. Of those we've been able to make contact through with our six-month follow-up calls, 77% have remained stably housed at that six-month contact. We are optimistic that we will continue to see this success rate when we make our 12-month follow-up calls later this year. We truly enjoy being able to change lives through the Family Reunification Program, and we look forward to having the opportunity to help more members of not only the downtown community, but also expanding into the Bankers Hill, Hillcrest, Balboa, Barrio Logan, Sherman Heights, and Golden Hill. The contract amendment before you today provides our team with the funding to grow both our team and expand our reach to serve approximately 1,400 clients in this upcoming fiscal year. And in closing, we stand ready to continue to lend our support on this issue and expand our consistent outreach presence into this in our current community and expanding into other communities as well. So thank you again for your time this morning.
Thank you, Ketra, and apologies for pronouncing your name incorrectly the first go. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Kalei. I have had the pleasure of seeing Ketra's videos at the Downtown Partnership dinner for the past 2 years, and it is incredibly moving, the work that you do and the passion that you bring to it. So it's a real pleasure to have you here with us today. Thank you. Do we have commissioner questions? Commissioner Davis.
Yes. Could someone talk to me a little bit about the children themselves, the education opportunities that you help them link to, as well as their health issues for the children themselves?
We're talking specifically with reuniting individuals with their support systems, regardless of the location, correct? Perfect. So families are a little bit different than an individual that we are working with. And part of the conversation that we have with the receiving end, the receiving family, is to ensure, one, that they do have a stable and safe place to go, and that they are ready for what is to come with children, which means health, connecting them with health resources, and also continuing their education in that location. So we make sure that they're prepared in travel with all of the documentations that they will need to be able to enroll into school and to be able to receive health care in the location that they're going. Does that answer your question?
Yes, and also, I don't know how to say this exactly, but when you initially meet with families to get everyone put back together, are there ways that you can check the safety of the parents as before you start helping them as a unit towards the children is what I'm...
Right. Yeah. So one specific piece is the legal requirements that come with children. And we ensure that, one, if this is a broken family and there is one parent who is not involved in what family support looks like, that we make sure that the person that's traveling has the legal right to take those children away and also is, again, prepared to enroll and get medical assistance when they get there. Outside of that, we do check for all legal issues. So if we're looking at something that potentially has a DV or some other instance, then we do discourage and we don't support going to an area that is not safe for them or their children.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
No questions? I just had a quick check in on one quick thing. The term housing navigator has been used for the past two presentations, and Lisa, you and I have chatted about this. But could you guys talk to me a little bit more about any efforts or ideas there are out there to put some uniformity on what those terms mean? I know that all across Southern California, folks that are grappling with response to the housing crisis are responding with a flood of housing coordinators and specialists and navigators and all kinds of folks. What do those terms have any firm certifications or?
Well, you can look to the United States Interagency Council on Homelessness and the National Alliance to End Homelessness for generalized definitions. But I would say that as the nature of our homelessness is changing, so the industry is now having to figure out how to respond to that and better identify what the specific needs are for different populations. And the RTFH is working fairly closely with HUD technical assistance team on some of these things, particularly as it relates to how they're redesigning the coordinated entry system. We also have the work that the Housing Commission is doing with CSH and Ann Oliva, who is working on the citywide strategic plan. So I suspect that there's going to be some identification through that process from the themes we're starting to see that's going to help us redefine what our system needs are and what kind of, I would say, job skills are best needed to meet those system needs. We are also starting early conversations with the Vice Chancellor of the Community Colleges about looking how to develop some industry-specific trainings, because, as you said, there's a growing need throughout our region and certainly throughout the state in an industry that hasn't really called itself an industry before. So we're looking at creating some certification programs and some associate's degree programs. And this is kind of the long game, but I think really critical to making sure that as financial resources come into our community, that we have the employee pool to effectively operationalize those financial resources. Is that
Thank
kind
you.
Of what you
yes.
were getting?
Yeah, and I suspected that there was going to be an answer that said something along those lines, that staff is already working on some large programmatic efforts. So I'm very pleased to hear about the community college engagement, and I think that's really promising. Please let us know from the commissioner's side how we might support that better. Rick?
If I could, Madam Chair, I think the word navigation is a fixed term, but the context in which we navigate is constantly changing. And I think if you look at the Downtown Partnership's Family Unification Program is a good example. I'm not aware of any other community in the country that's got quite this programmatic setup. And I think in terms of efficiency and usefulness is perhaps the most efficient program for the homeless the Housing Commission operates. And you heard that there was a 76% success rate. That's pretty good in this environment. I think that it's important to note, as Lisa just indicated, this whole world is changing on us. And it's changing not only in San Diego, but throughout the country. And as homelessness is not a cause, it's a result of a lot of different factors, it's important to look for remedies that fit the causes, and they're not all the same thing. And so I suspect that it will only become more complicated as we go forward with more options and opportunities for us and for the people involved. Because the truth is, this reflects a very complicated part of the modern world that we live in.
Thank you. And to be clear, I really just want to make sure that staff have the resources and expertise to deal with some of the more challenging moments they may have. There's high turnover in these sorts of fields. I understand that. I just want to make sure that they
have the support possible. Yeah, there is. And I think that one of the areas that we really want to concentrate on as we work through the Vice Chancellor's work is not just training and skill sets for the people that are coming into this work, but also self-care programs. Because they're dealing with very high barrier, high need families, and it can be very impactful on them as well. So it's working through that process. And then at the RTFH level and at the CSH level around the plan, we're also really looking at how we bring in programming and supports for the leadership of our service providers to make sure that they have the resources that they need in place to help support those from like sort of an up top, bottom up and top down level. And to speak just again to navigation, there's housing navigation, which could be very specific to navigating a private landlord and getting into a private unit and that kind of paperwork and all that's involved. But there's also system navigation. And system navigation, one, it's an important skill set to have, but also the other end of that is looking at our systems and seeing how we can make them more simplified, not just for our users, our client users, but also for our staff users. And that's a big piece of why RTFH is redesigning CES.
Wonderful. Thank you. That's very positive. And I did not mean to redirect the conversation. My apologies. Back to the item. Do we have a motion? Oh, do we have an advisory motion?
A slight change to the recommendation, Madam Chair, if you would.
Of course.
It currently says that the San Diego Housing Commission take the following actions. I would request the action be that the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego take actions referenced in items 1, 2, and 3.
Thank you. Do we have that motion? Moved by Commissioner Davis. Thank you. You're going to leave me hanging? Seconded by Commissioner Klumpner. It's painful. All in favor? I think I'm voting anymore. Motion carries. All right. And our final item before our workshop is the proposed 2020 Affordable Housing Fund Annual Plan. Welcome to Saket and Tracy. Floor is yours.
Go ahead and get started. So, good morning, Chair Benvenuto, Commissioners, Mr. Gentry, Mr. Christensen. I'm Saket Dayal, Senior Vice President of Business Administration, with our Chief Financial Officer, Tracy McDermott. Also want to acknowledge Julia Saar, our Director of Special Programs and Compliance. Julia and her team prepare and track the outcomes throughout the year for the annual report. This morning, we're here to present the proposed FY 2020 Affordable Housing Fund Annual Plan. So each year, the Housing Commission presents the plan to the City Council for approval. The plan is the framework for planning and budgeting of the fund revenues and describes the programs eligible to be funded. Summarizing our recommendations, we're asking the board to recommend that the City Council approve the annual plan, activity location of $72.6 million and the model programs, and authorize the President and CEO to reallocate funds amongst the model programs in response to market demands and opportunities. The Affordable Housing Fund is a permanent, annually renewable fund to help the housing needs of the city's very low to moderate income households. The intent of the fund, as stated in the municipal code, is to meet a portion of the needs for housing that is affordable to households with very low to moderate incomes, support the balanced communities policy, leverage every $1 of city funds with $2 of non-city capital funds, and traditionally we've far surpassed that number. In fact, in the last report, it was 1:7. Preserve and maintain renter and ownership affordable housing and encourage private sector activities that advance these goals. Quick history, the Affordable Housing Fund was created in June 2003. The fund is composed of two funding sources, the Inclusionary and the Housing Trust Fund. The Inclusionary Housing Fund revenue comes from collections of fees and residential developments and revenue from loan repayments. And these funds are primarily used for the construction of new affordable housing. Historically, these funds have been expended on first-time homebuyer programs and rental housing production. The Housing Trust Fund revenues comes from fees on commercial developments and loan repayments. These funds are used for a wide range of activities, including rental housing production, homebuyer assistance, rehabilitation, and transitional housing operating support. And with that, I'll pass it on to Tracy.
Thank you, Saket. Good morning. So in fiscal year 2020, the Housing Commission anticipates more than $72 million in the Affordable Housing Fund. The funding is composed of $7 million of new funding, as well as a fund balance of more than $65 million. This slide represents the proposed fiscal year 2020 allocation of funds. The majority, about 86%, is committed to rental housing finance activities, with the remaining allocated to home ownership, homeless initiatives, and administration.
difficult.
This slide lists the major activities committed under the rental housing finance program. As you can see, the majority is already committed to ongoing rental housing finance projects. Less than $2 million remains available to be committed. I'm done with finance. Back to program.
So the model program activity list guides the uses of the Affordable Housing Fund. Model programs reflect programs to which the investment of affordable housing funds is permitted, but not required. The significant changes to the model programs for the fiscal year 2020 include the companion unit finance pilot program, and I think perfect timing or perfectly set up the family reunification program. We're also removing the clean and greenhouse rehabilitation program. In addition, program scopes, target populations, and term lengths of several programs were revised to be consistent with current initiatives and activities. The proposed allocation and model programs were presented at the ranches Rancho Penasquitos, Southeastern, and Kensington Talmadge community planning groups in February. This slide displays a few of the examples of affordable rental housing developments that were supported by Affordable Housing Fund revenues. And with that, concludes our presentation. We, as well as program staff, are available to answer any questions.
Commissioner questions? Okay. Rick?
At the risk of beating this horse dead one more time, can we look back at slide number 7, please? Reason being is that frequently the board will hear from interested members of the community that the Housing Commission does not make full use of utilization of the monies allocated to us for these programs. I'll point out that as Tracy pointed out, there's less than $2 million that have not been committed, 1.7. The rest of this is committed and targeted. And as the board will remember from previous presentations, there's a process we go through to make sure that we notice and allocate in the public, in a fair, open, competitive public fashion. And then there's a time period when these funds are used to leverage other monies, which means that we effectively leverage by a factor of about 3 to 4 to 1, as my recollection goes, on these monies. So I just want to make sure that the record reflects that these monies are fully utilized, they are fully committed, they are fully leveraged, and there's no monies unused here at the present time.
Okay, well, now that you set yourself up, would you also speak to the importance of this money in regard to the state budget and their expansion of the low-income housing tax credit program, please?
I'm so glad you asked. We just finished a nice basketball tournament, so you gave me an assist here to go along with the previous score. There are two forms of tax credits that are allocated out of Sacramento, the 4% and the 9%. And as common sense would tell you, the 9%ers are more valuable than the 4%ers, and the 9%ers are very competitive. And there are always more applications for the 9%ers out of the state than there is money to allocate. And basically the way those tax credits work is that the federal government will allocate so much in terms of tax credit availability across the nation per year. It will be allocated basically on a per capita basis to each state. Each state will then come up with its own criteria for basically competitively giving these authorizations away. The tax credit authorization that comes out of Sacramento basically then is what interested investors can use as a basis for selling money, if you will, in an equity form to partnerships set up to do tax credit properties. And so a developer, this is almost like building a bridge from opposite sides of the river at the same time and hoping you meet in the middle. You've got money authorizations available in Sacramento that are competitive. Then you have developers locally, which may be public or private sector, developing a property, looking for that money to complete the property. There is enough tax credit equity available per property allocated, typically to do much of the deal, but almost never to do all of it. There's a need in order to be competitive for the allocations from the state for local deal to have some local match money and what we call gap financing. And that gap financing is what this agency provides via the sources that Suket and Tracy mentioned a minute ago, both inclusionary and linkage fees. And also we use some federal monies for this as well, but less so than is available to us, particularly for inclusionary. So the Housing Authority does not have these gap funds available to target and to commit to developers, then the developers are not as competitive in Sacramento getting a tax credit award. It means other localities will be more competitive, and those tax credit awards will go more to places like this, the Bay Area or the L.A. Basin, rather than coming in here. So it's utterly essential that we have these monies available to help our own local developers get access to these awards here locally. Now, one of the complaints you will hear from the community is the high cost of some of these programs that are developed, and they're not cheap. But I'll also point out that the most efficient way I think government can spend money is to do things right the first time so you don't have to redo them over time. And by developing a quality property front end, you're able to ensure its value for the state required time period here of 55 years. Also, it's designed for a population that is not always the easiest on building quality, so you make sure you build a good, decent property to start with. You put money enough into it to make it last over time, and that requires multiple sources. The monies that we invest tend to vary anywhere from about $85,000 to $100K per door in investment for these properties. These we will then leverage another $200,000 to $300,000 per door in additional funding through the tax credits, which then will cover the total development cost of the property. Absent our involvement here, then San Diego is less competitive with these funds, and the funds will flow elsewhere. So basically what we've done here is to back into the requirements for these programs. I'll point out also one other permutation here with the recent issues and problems with Rancho Panecitas in mind, as you all are well, very well aware of. One of the requirements that we've done here ever since I arrived in 08 is that whenever we invest city money into a property here, at the end of the tax credit compliance time period, which typically runs about an 18-year time from the time of award through development to a 15-year tax credit compliance time period to the end of that time period, when a property can be re-syndicated and reused and can actually fall out of low-income use. If the developer wants to use it for another purpose, as the developer in Rancho Panecitas did, we have the first right of refusal to purchase here, meaning that if the partnership that owns one of these 9% deals wants to sell the property or to reuse it, they have to give us the option to purchase it first. Doesn't mean they give us the money to purchase it with, but it gives us the opportunity to keep this property in low-income use and keep it, it's a good preservation technique. That may be an over answer to your question, but I think what it means is that we try to make sure that we are competitive here in San Diego to get as much affordable housing product in from Sacramento as we can.
Thank you. I just thinking about this money linked with the opportunity that the state is presenting and in light of the oft referred to coming recession, it's going to be even more important that we have these funds available to use to make sure that the affordable housing production doesn't completely stall. So thank you. And the vast majority of the money does go toward the affordable rental housing production. There are some other ancillary programs, but I just want to highlight that the large bulk of this is going directly to that. So any other questions now that I've meandered?
I'm just going to take the opportunity to ask about one of those ancillary programs. Can somebody talk a little bit about the ADU program and it says here up to five, it's going to be used for up to five units. What's the proposed financing structure?
So I can start and then have program staff provide more details.
Okay.
Bigger picture, as far as the companion, you're talking about the companion units, right? So the companion units, we have two programs that we're going to do. One of them is a development pilot where we're going to build properties on our own SGHC-owned properties that is not going to be funded with Affordable Housing Funds. And the second is the finance program where we're currently have an RFP on the street to evaluate the feasibility of a loan program for homeowners that are interested. And then I would ask someone from the real estate team to provide more detail on it.
Good morning, Emily Jacobs. So yes, as Suquette had mentioned, we are exploring an ADU or companion unit program. I know ADU and companion unit are used interchangeably. So our development team will be looking at developing 3 to 5 companion units on suitable single family locations. What they're doing right now is they're in due diligence to make that happen in this next fiscal year. On the same parallel track, we'll be exploring the feasibility of a finance program, and a lot of that has to do with the cost that we're going to see from the development team to see if that's in fact feasible.
Got it. Oh, okay. I think I understand. I'll follow up with other questions later. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. With that, do we have an advisory motion? So moved. Thank you, Mr. Davis. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you very much. And with that, now we move into our workshop and discussion on the proposed 2020 budget.
Good morning, Commissioners. I'm Jeff Davis, Chief of Staff, and with me is Tracy McDermott, our Chief Financial Officer. I will be providing a brief overview of some of the major highlights of our proposed fiscal year 2020 budget, and then Tracy will walk you through in detail the objectives and deliverables and the agency's proposed sources and uses of funds. This year, we are proposing a budget of $428 million. This is a 10% increase in our current budget, from our current budget, and if approved, the fiscal year 2020 budget would also be the second largest budget in the agency's history. The budget we are presenting to you today is based upon conservative estimates, while robustly advancing our programs that have a positive impact on the lives of San Diegans who have lower income or who experience homelessness. To develop this budget, we used the 2019 level of funding because we do not yet know what the federal funding will be for fiscal year 2020. However, it's very noteworthy to see that the President's proposed fiscal year 2020 budget request released in March actually indicates that it would include funding to maintain services for all households currently assisted by HUD. We do not anticipate receiving official notification of our federal budget authority from HUD until the end of May. This budget also reflects a continuing expansion of the Housing Commission's leadership role in programs to address homelessness. As this slide shows, our budget for homelessness programs has increased steadily in the last 5 years. In fiscal year 2020, expenditures on homelessness programs are budgeted to exceed $100 million. Redirecting funds to address homelessness does impact other Housing Commission programs. It is one of the many factors that influence the funding available to invest in affordable housing development, including the Housing Commission's capital budget. The budget that we are presenting to you today will enable the Housing Commission to continue to help approximately 15,400 families pay their rent, renovate and rehabilitate and manage our growing number of affordable rental units, and administer programs that address the homelessness crisis in our city. Tracy will now share with you the details of our budget.
Thank you, Joe.
We developed the proposed fiscal year 2020 budget with the agency's mission in mind. In the coming fiscal year, The budget will focus on the Housing Commission's major program areas, providing rental assistance, creating and preserving affordable housing, and addressing homelessness. In addition to providing rental assistance to low-income households, we will continue the Path to Success initiative, which will assist work-able rental assistance participants and public housing residents to become more financially self-reliant. Also, the Housing Commission will launch a new landlord partnership program. This program is included in the fiscal year 2020 Move Into Work annual plan that this board approved last month. The program provides incentives to current and prospective landlords to rent housing units to Section 8 Housing Choice Voucher Rental Assistance participants. This new program is similar to the Landlord Engagement and Assistance Program, or LEAP, in the Housing First San Diego Housing Homeless Action Plan, which encourages landlords to rent to San Diegans experiencing homelessness. To support the creation and preservation of affordable housing, the proposed budget commits more than $28 million to acquire affordable housing and rehabilitate Housing Commission-owned properties. We also set aside funds to provide loans to developers for the creation of affordable rental housing units. In addition, the Housing Commission will launch companion unit pilot programs. This includes developing companion units at agency-owned properties and providing financing to private homeowners. This budget also supports the continuation of the current phase of the Housing Commission's Homelessness Action Plan, Housing First San Diego. This plan has already surpassed its three-year goal by creating permanent housing opportunities for more than 3,000 individuals and families experiencing homelessness. This slide shows the programs of Housing First San Diego. The Housing Commission also administers the City of San Diego's homeless shelters and service programs. These programs include the city's three temporary bridge shelters, which provide beds and services for up to 674 individuals, and the city's Storage Connect Center, which provides up to 500 storage bins for individuals experiencing homelessness. In addition, the city's Housing Navigation Center is expected to launch this summer. Now let's talk about our sources of funds for fiscal year 2020. This slide compares total funding sources for fiscal year 2020 to 2019. Total funding will increase by $40 million, or about 10%. Half of this increase is from $20 million in new revenue. This includes an increase in HUD-held reserves that will be drawn down in fiscal year 2020. I just want to point out, HUD only releases these funds to the Housing Commission for specific programs, and we do not have the discretion to apply these funds to any program we choose. New revenue in fiscal year 2020 also includes a one-time receipt of State Homelessness Emergency Aid Program, or HEAP, funds. The new revenue increase will be offset by a reduction in expected collections from the city's Affordable Housing Fund and no expectation of Community Development Block Grant Revolving Loan Funds in fiscal year 2020. The other half of the overall increase in funding is due to program reserves that were committed to affordable housing activities in fiscal year 2019 and are expected to be funded in fiscal year 2020 and beyond. This pie chart of the Housing Commission's new revenue for fiscal year 2020 shows that more than 81% is from federal funding. Now we'll discuss the uses of funds. This is a year-over-year comparison of funding uses by major category. As you can see, overall, expenses are relatively flat. We expect modest increases in personnel and property expenses, which will be offset by a decrease in capital expenditures. This pie chart depicts total funding uses not including reserves by major division. The majority of the funding uses in fiscal year 2020, about 55%, are in the rental assistance division, shown as the blue area on the chart. Now Jeff will go over staffing and homelessness program expenditures.
So as you can see from this slide, we have added staff, as we will be expanding our programs in mobility counseling, landlord engagement, and due to the new HEAP funding, we will be increasing our activities in the areas of homelessness, such as additional prevention and diversion and rapid rehousing. As the city has turned to the Housing Commission to help address homelessness in recent years, our expenditures for homelessness programs have increased steadily and significantly. This chart illustrates for you the Housing Commission's growing investment in addressing homelessness over those last 5 years. These programs in particular require more personnel than other more traditional programs because of the population they serve, as well as the direct one-on-one interactions that are necessary with families, landlords, and service providers. This is among the reasons why our staffing needs have increased. The fiscal year 2020 budget will support Housing Commission homelessness programs, as well as the agency's administration of city programs. The Housing Commission budget expenditures by the major homelessness programs in fiscal year 2020 exceed $107 million. The city's temporary bridge shelters will be in their third year of operation in fiscal year 2020. They continue to offer a safe location for individuals experiencing homelessness, and upon approval of the operating agreement extensions from the Housing Authority, we anticipate utilizing about $11.5 million in Housing Commission funds for the operation of those shelters. On March 12th, the Housing Authority of the City of San Diego approved the first one-year renewal option for the agreement with Mental Health Systems to operate the city's Storage Connect Center for a term of July 1st, 2019 through June 30th, 2020. In the proposed fiscal year 2020 budget, the Housing Commission is committing approximately $1.7 million in Housing Commission funds for the Storage Center operations. At this board's meeting on May 3rd, we will be recommending your approval of the fiscal year 2020 budget in the amount of $428 million. And this concludes our presentation. Tracy and I, along with fiscal staff, are available to answer any questions you have.
Thank you. I'm sorry that the rest of the commissioners weren't here for this, but we'll get to do it again. Any commissioner questions? Commissioner Davis.
Yes. How is the landlord partnership program working, and how is it changing or evolving? Okay. Pardon? The rental assistant, where you're having a program to get more landlords in to welcoming Section 8 people to live at their in their units or on their property. What am I in the wrong category to ask about that? I'm curious about it. Yeah.
And Deanna oversees our a program that helps landlords be incentivized to assist homeless persons, and Azucena Valladolid oversees the rental assistance program, which helps with Section 8 voucher holders and their efforts to find a unit. So I'll ask Azucena to speak to how that program is going and how it will be expanded with this budget approval.
Yeah, before that, Ms. Davis, what the big difference has happened is last August, the City Council passed an ordinance that made it illegal for a landlord to discriminate against source of income in renting to families and individuals. It's going to be effective this coming August. And what that means is that a landlord cannot discriminate against a Section 8 voucher holder. That's the big difference. And as in a lot of activities we're involved in, the Housing Commission is kind of the adapter play between city policy and the real world out there as things work. As you can imagine, the landlord community did not like being forced to do something. And as a practical matter, we've not had any problem at all getting willing landlord participation in our programs since the initiation of the program. So what the Housing Commission has done is to develop an adapter model that I'm sure Azucena is going to get into that basically sets up some funding mechanisms to assure that the landlords will not receive any worse risk dealing with voucher customers as they would in their ordinary customer base, heavily based on what we discovered at the Housing Our Heroes program. And I'll ask Susana to take it from there.
Good morning. So as Jeff had mentioned, our Housing Homeless Innovations team currently administers our LEAP program, where there is currently the Landlord Engagement Assistance Program. So we've seen many successes, and we've learned a lot of best practices from their existing program, which we will be expanding into the traditional Section 8 program. So upon HUD approval, we will be implementing a landlord partnership program in the Rental Assistance Division by August 1st. That individual program will include benefits such as an assurance fund, where any excess damages that exceed security deposits could be compensated by the Housing Commission. There will also be incentives to landlords who rent to our Section 8 participants, and there's another financial incentive for families who are transitioning from one rental unit into the other to make sure that we retain landlords in the program. We've also modified and simplified some of our other inspection processes as well. So we have a menu of items that we'll be rolling out into our landlord partnership program. And then one final thing that we're also adding in is additional staff support. So we have dedicated resources for the landlords when they're trying to engage with us as well.
And how do you market this? How do you reach out to new landlords to be
involved? So we currently have a mobility counseling program that we implemented in January of 2018, which has proven to be very successful. The program started out very small, and in last year alone, we recruited close to 400 new landlords that have never participated in our program before. So in fiscal year 20, under our budget, we are looking to expand that program. Additionally, last year, we established a landlord advisory committee where we have invited the San Diego County Apartment Association, the California Apartment Association, and the San Diego Association of Realtors to become committee members. So we have been meeting with them on an ongoing basis to receive ideas of how we can make our program more attractive, and we've been engaging with their thousands of landlords. So we've been able to establish new relationships that way as well.
Thank you very much.
Any other questions? No? Okay. Thank you very much. And with that, nope. Go ahead, Rick.
Sorry, Madam Chair, the risk of further complicating things. One wrinkle I need to point out in this budget, although I think it's in the scope of a near $400 million budget, is a minor wrinkle. It's a wrinkle nonetheless. And that is the homelessness shelters that were authorized a year and a half ago. For the first two fiscal years those shelters have operated, the shelters plus storage facility, well, if you go back to the autumn of 2017, when the hepatitis A epidemic had hit hard, that was the impetus for the city establishing these shelters. The Housing Commission stepped up to the plate and agreed to cover the cost. The city then agreed to use its best faith efforts to reimburse the Housing Commission for those dollars. For the first two fiscal years, ending June 30th this summer, the Housing Commission will have spent something north of $18 million on these efforts for 2 years, not quite 2 years. And the city, to their credit, has reimbursed the commission either directly or with in-kind resources to the tune of over $17 million. So it's been close to a dollar-for-dollar match, close enough that I would term it that. However, for the next fiscal year 2020, the cost of shelters plus storage, as you've seen in your numbers here, is something just north of $13 million. And there is no offset shown by the city. The city, as you know, has additional fiscal pressures right now, not the least of which have to do with retirement cost issues. And so this is going to be an issue that I will point out to the Housing Authority and to the people, as they said, as the Housing Authority and the City Council, and I need you all to recognize as well. The Housing Commission, and I in particular, are still presenting this budget to you. My particular position is that we were right to fund those shelters a year and a half ago, and a three-year time period to me is a minimal effort in this endeavor. However, a major policy decision that I'm going to ask the city to make, and you all as part of it over the next year, is how we put these homelessness programs together with some degree of financial consistency and forward-looking decision-making. The way an organization spends its money is perhaps the most important policy decision it makes. And in that regard, we've also got the homelessness strategic plan that will be issued this summer, late July, early August, by the Corporation for Supportive Housing, headed up by Ann Oliva, as you heard from Lisa Jones a while ago. So I think with the plan, a proposed plan coming out, with a full solid year to make a decision, what I'm going to be asking you all and the Housing Authority to and the City Council to decide over the next year is for fiscal year 2021, how do we put these homelessness endeavors and efforts together into a single unitary system with a rational way of making budgetary projections?
Thank you for highlighting that. I know that we are all eagerly awaiting that report. I think that will provide perhaps an opportunity for better unity in how we address all of these things. It's a little discouraging to know that the funds have not been allocated by the city for the upcoming fiscal year. I'm confident that we're still early enough in those negotiations that we might find some wiggle room. Very hopeful. And I hope you guys will continue to work on that. Thank you for pointing that out.
Just as a further corollary, I don't believe that we have a static world here where where sources and uses are fixed and you can only do algebra with them. You can grow the whole pot. I'll point out that when I got here 11 years ago, the Housing Commission staffing was 240 employees. We've increased our size by 100 people in the last 11 years. That's not too shabby. And we've done it in a manner that's maintained balanced budgets, meaning we've identified revenue growth to cover our size growth and our expense growth, and we've done it in a very prudent, small-c conservative way. And so what I would indicate is that it's not just a matter of spending and cost offsets. There are ways to grow the pie and grow programs and going forward. And that's the way I'm going to encourage the city leadership to look at this going forward. It's not just a matter of where we are now. It's a matter of where we want to be and what we can do to increase and allocate resources to deal with what is, I think, going to be a growing problem, and not just here but throughout the country.
On that positive note, do we have any other comments? No. Okay. Thank you. I believe we can now adjourn.
And I think we need a motion on the minutes as well.
Oh, that's the second month in a row that I've done that. Thank you. Yep. All right. Is it an advisory vote on the minutes as well? Okay. Do we have approval on the minutes from the March 8th meeting? Thank you. All in favor? Okay. Motion carries. Thank you, everyone, for your patience this morning. I appreciate it. We are adjourned.